D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, Parker Kelly here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Chad Withrow. Hello, Chad. How are you?
Doing great, guys. Hope you're doing well.
We are. First of all, congratulations on your new venture with your friend and our friend, Jonathan Hutton, at Sport and State. We had Hutton on the show the other day. I know the two of you are excited, so congratulations. I just want to say that to start.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a lot of work in the process to get this thing ready, and it was fun launching it this week, and it's been a great reception so far. So appreciate you guys and hopping on your show every week, and appreciate everybody who tuned in these past 3 days.
Also, I watched some of the Baylor-Brentwood Academy game last night on ESPN, and remember during Titans games when the broadcast would show footage of Derrick Henry playing high school football, and it was literally man versus boys out there? That's how I felt watching David Gabriel Georges last night. That was my first viewing of him. I can understand why Vols fans are excited.
Well, and keep this in mind, too. Like, you're spot on right, Adam, with what you're saying. Now, who Derrick Henry was playing were little boys in North Florida.
True.
In the smallest classification, right? This dude is doing this against all future SEC players on that Brentwood Academy defense. He's got two Tennessee teammates that played for Brentwood Academy on that defense. Kenneth Simon, son of great Tennessee linebacker Kevin Simon, being one of them. 250-plus all-purpose yards. They lined him up in the slot. They lined him up out wide. He had a big screen pass for a touchdown. I mean, dude is a freak, and I mean that in the kindest way. I am very excited. I keep thinking, you know, what if DGG played at Even Beach the way Jalen Hurd did? And Jalen Hurd was phenomenal in high school. And I know we remember watching him and covering him. But how many records would this guy break if he were playing in any other classification other than Division II, 3A with far and away the best athletes in the state in that classification? That's what's so remarkable is this is one of the best single classifications in the nation. And he is putting up video game numbers against those dudes. He would rush for 15,000 yards against Derrick Henry's schedule from back in high school. Like, I have never been higher on a high school football recruit than I am DGG. Mark it down, fellas, and we can play this at some point. Tennessee will win the SEC in one of his 3 years. I don't know which one. They're going to win a conference title, and it's going to be because of that dude.
Chad, I said this dude was everything that you advertised him to be and more. Men amongst boys with him running the football. So UT has them a good one when you're talking about running backs.
And he's also like the Ivan Drago of high school football. And, he's a machine. Like, he doesn't eat sugar. He does nothing but works out.
They made that a big deal. They were like, how is it that a 18-year-old kid doesn't eat sugar?
I mean, D-Mace, it's perfect. Like, English is his second language. You know,
yeah, he's from Canada. Is he from Canada?
He's from Canada, but he speaks French. Mm-hmm. He's French-Canadian from Quebec. He's Haitian-Canadian, his family. His family all speaks French. French is his first language. He speaks English well enough, but it's his second language. He's not spent a lot of time macking on girls on campus. This dude is eating protein all day, no sugar. He's working out, you know, probably 12 hours out of the day. And he's banging hats on the football field. That's what he does. It's all he does. That's why he's going to win a championship for the Vols. I'm completely convinced after watching one week one high school football game last night in its entirety.
Speaking of Tennessee, Chad, I saw you post this about an hour ago. Tennessee should play Arian Carter and dare the NCAA to do something about it. The guy received $400 for a flight and paid it back. Meanwhile, guys are recording sacks in NFL preseason games and are eligible immediately. Two questions. One, help us make sense of whatever the hell is going on in the NCAA right now. And two, if Tennessee were to take you up on that proclamation and play Arian Carter, what do you think the NCAA would actually do?
I think they'd try to say Tennessee was ineligible and lost those two games is what they would attempt to do. I don't know how they could with a straight face. And I guarantee you Tennessee could fight it in court and show that he was, in fact, eligible, and it was fine, and they're not going to make them ineligible for that game. I think it's on Tennessee now with everything going on. I really do. If they sit him, it's a Tennessee decision. They're playing by the rules way too much in a sport that has no rules. So that, to me, it's on Tennessee if they decide not to play the guy, not the NCAA anymore, because I think it'd be foolish not to play him, because just like I wrote, you got guys who are in the NFL who are actively trying to get cut from their rosters right now so they can join a camp for college football, because they know they're going to get paid more money to go back and play in college. And guys, you got college coaches all over the place, and I've talked to some people about this. They are going to be actively scouting. There's going to be scouts in the department of every SEC team watching preseason games this weekend to see who's going to drop from teams that they can take that have a fifth year of eligibility. Mark my word, this is happening all over the place.
So, Chad,
this weekend,
as much as we know this is wrong in a sense, and when you're talking sports, like, it's, that's just wrong, like going to get a guy that has already spent time with the NFL team in any capacity, and I'm not even talking making a roster, but they played in preseason games. You know it's wrong. Are they just going to continue to do this until somebody tells them they can't anymore? Because none of them really likes this.
No, they're going to keep doing it. Hey, look, everybody, it's all self-serving. Right now, the players are doing it, and I understand why. They don't have a future in the NFL, the guys we're talking about, most of them. They know they got a cup of coffee at best. So
I'm specifically talking about the coaches, really, because the players, they're going to do what they're going to do. It's the coaches that, because there always has to be a coach or a program that allows these guys to come back.
They have to say, we're going to take it, even if it means we got to take one kid somewhere along the line and ask him to leave.
Yeah, look, Tom Izzo can stand.
Hey, stay off my boy Izzo, man.
I'm paying him a compliment. Okay. Tom Izzo has the clout to stand up and say, I'm not going to do it. This is ridiculous. I'll call out coaches that go and get dudes who played in Europe or played in the G League and all this, or that. I'm not going to do it. You know, we can't do it as a sport. Dan Hurley, I think, can say that too, having won, you know, national titles. If you are a coach, though, in the SEC, let me pose the question to you guys. If you're a coach in the SEC, and this is now allowed because of a court ruling, and there are going to be other SEC rivals that go and get – we know that LSU is going to go get guys. We know that other programs are going to go get guys. Let's say someone goes out and they add three difference makers that were in an NFL camp that have another year of eligibility. Let's say that team is Arkansas, okay? Let's say Tennessee goes on the road to Arkansas and they lose by a field goal in large part because some receiver dropped down from the NFL to Arkansas and had 140 yards receiving. And then a defensive back had a pick six. And those are the two difference makers. Do you think Tennessee will cut Josh Heupel slack if he didn't add one of those pro players, if he had a chance to? Do you think that they're going to stand up and say, boy, at least our coach stands for something and didn't go out and did it?
That's
no.
the problem.
No, they're going to be like, why didn't you go out and get him?
I'm going to sit there and say, we're not doing what it takes to win. I've seen it, guys, on social media already today. If Tennessee doesn't go out and add four or five of these guys, we don't care about winning the way other programs do.
Just me.
That
and
is going to be the reaction to it.
But I thought it just meant more with all SEC teams, regardless of who it was.
And that's what it's got to be. That's my point. Like, if one SEC team is going to do it, D-Mace, then everybody's going to try to do it. I really believe that. I think they're all going to take anybody they can if they feel like that player is a plug-and-play guy who can come right in and help their team win SEC football games or Big Ten football games or whatever the case may be. If you were a top-level program, they're going to do it because they know – come November, if they lose a game they were supposed to win, and that team has three of these guys on it, and you have none, and it's a close game, and your fan base sees it as you didn't do what was necessary, they're not going to cut you any slack.
So with that being said, Chad, you know, you're talking about guys potentially coming out of basically the NFL to play in college, and say if a UT doesn't, you know, reach and try to get one of these guys, and they're ultimately – a reason why they may lose to a team because they may have gotten a guy they had a chance to get. And with the depth, as we always say, the depth of the SEC, is 8-5 enough for Heupel in this program?
I mean, I would have to see what the eight were. Mm-hmm. You know, like I always say, Hutton always says it too, and I love it. You know, it's not if you lose, it's how you lose. Mm-hmm. And I think in the SEC or in college football, it's also who you lost to. You know, like if you upset someone and maybe you lost some of the toss-up games, but you have that big signature win, maybe you feel better about an 8-4 or 8-5 at the end of the year after a bowl game. If you lose to Vandy for a second straight year and you drop another couple games you thought going into the season you were going to win and you don't get it and you're, you know, get 7 or 8 wins, every end-of-the-year record, I think, D-Mace, feels a little bit different based on all that. I'll just say, first off, I don't like any of this. Like, I'm like 95% of sports fans. I think it's ridiculous that guys are leaving the NFL to go back to college with all these court rulings. I think it's absurd, and it shines a spotlight on the absurdity of college football and college sports right now. All I'm saying is I also understand from the coaches and player perspective that your job is to do whatever you can to win games. And if someone is getting an upper hand on you by doing this, coaches are going to try to level the field and do it themselves. Tennessee themselves, guys, just this past week, they added a fifth-year guy who got an exemption because of this new rule from Tennessee Tech, who had exhausted his eligibility. They lost two defensive backs, Idris Farouk being one of them for the season. They added a safety from Tennessee Tech, who had already completed his time there, just right down the road in Cookeville. That's college football in 2026. You start losing bodies in camp, you go out and pull someone up from the farm system in the OVC, and boom, they're on your campus and they're ready to roll.
And Chad, I think the term I would use is like self-preservation. Like you mentioned Izzo and certain coaches that can stand on principle, but they have the bubble, right? They have insulation if you've got the pelts on the wall, right? If you won, but most coaches are self-preservation. So their morals might be one thing, their ethics, but I think that instinct of I have to win or else they're going to move on from me, that's what triggers this. And it pulls other coaches into that fray. So it becomes common.
Yeah, and look, I think those guys, if they start to lose, they haven't really lost the big clip. The ones I mentioned, Izzo, Hurley, they've won pretty much every single season. If they start to lose and they don't like the way it's going and they're still around coaching, guess what they're going to do? Probably the stuff they hate doing right now.
Adapt.
They're going to say, well
who's,
I got to do it.
Baseball, Tim Corbin, he's doing that. I don't think he wanted to have to do it this way. I think he wanted to stay with his formula. He thought that was the best way, and he thought he could maybe win staying with that, but he's had to adjust. I think that's a great example of what we're talking about.
Exactly right. And I think you can stand on principle all you want, but if you are a competitive person and you know that you are judged by winning and losing, you eventually, even you can cry and moan about it all you want, but you are going to do what is necessary to keep up with everyone else. Nick Saban's a great example. Nick Saban was crying about the speed of the game and how it was hurting players and it was unsafe. And what was he doing behind the scenes the whole time? He was developing an offense or hiring someone that could speed it up, because he knew exactly what hurt his great defenses at Alabama, and he started playing the game also. He wasn't going to sit back and say, we're going to be 3 yards in a cloud of dust and play slow. No, he was going to do what was working in the sport eventually, even if he didn't like it. But really, he didn't like it because it's the one thing his team couldn't prepare for as well. So he hated it. And then he started talking about injuries and everything else. But the whole time, he was doing the exact same thing that he was complaining about. Why? Because Nick Saban, even after all the winning he had done and the national titles and everything, he wanted to win more national titles. That's how these guys are wired. And you're right, Willie, especially those that have to worry about self-preservation, that know that they could be on the hot seat at any time. They're going to do what's necessary to make sure they're giving themselves a chance to win and win big.
Chad, I read an article, and we're going to talk about it on our show here pretty soon, about the inner workings of the transfer portal and the madness of the quarterback position in a short period of time. And it tracks Bo Pribula, who was at Missouri, for those that maybe don't remember the name, they might have heard the name, but he was Missouri's quarterback. He got hurt at Vanderbilt, and that kind of sunk Missouri's season. Vanderbilt came back, won the game. Missouri wasn't quite the same after that. And then he hit the portal, and he visited, what was it, Adam, 8 schools in 6 days?
8 days on the road,
eight,
6 wow. college visits.
8 days, 6 schools.
More than 6,000 miles traveled across the country and back.
It's complete madness. I think most college fans who are casual probably would never really be concern themselves unless they had a son or a nephew or a relative or a friend that has gone through it. But just to read about the process, so this is what I want to ask you, Chad. Privola was on the Tennessee campus. One of those stops along the ride was to Tennessee. And in the moment in time, Trinidad Chambliss had been ruled ineligible before he got the injunction. So all of these things are moving in real time, and all of these guys have to decide where they're going. And there were cases where Privola and other quarterbacks would get a call from a school, say, come visit. We're interested in you. But they didn't even literally have time to get to the campus before they either had to make the decision or the other team or the school had already signed a different quarterback. It's beyond speed dating, the madness of it.
And, Willie, I'm willing to bet that someone paid more than $400 in flights and travel expenses for Privola to go on all these things that Arion Carter got paid by one agent and then paid him back for one visit to try to go pro. It's crazy. And I remember when Privola was on Tennessee's campus, it was right around the time Tennessee was trying to figure out if Sam Leavitt was going to go to LSU or Tennessee. Not just the waiting game of guys being eligible, but the musical chairs of, well, we can get this guy to campus. There was a lot of rumors about Brendan Sorsby in Knoxville. His brother, I think, is a high school coach in the Knoxville area, and people were connecting him from Cincinnati to Tennessee, and Tennessee dodged a bullet with that one, where he ends up at Texas Tech, and then everything else broke there. It's crazy to think about trying to get the right guy on campus to commit right away, but if they don't, similar to Tennessee and Sam Leavitt, who chose Lane Kiffin at LSU, then where do you go next, and do you really want that guy? And, oh, this guy also needs to know about this other player over at Duke or whatever the other school is, because that may be the next spot they're visiting. It's both exciting and it's total madness. I mean, the college football transfer portal season now is in many ways kind of like NBA free agency. It can be more exciting than some of the weeks of the season when you get to that end of that season and that mad dash to go add guys, especially quarterbacks.
Let me ask you this. Alabama, I want to get your take on them because that's a big game for Tennessee. And it just came out they're going to each wear the solid color for the first time since what, Adam?
1970.
Yeah. It's always fun to watch those teams play, but that could be a big swing game for Tennessee if they can come up with that win. What's the matchup look like with Alabama in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's a huge one for both. I think Keelon Russell is going to be the starter for Alabama. I know they've named one yet, but I feel like everything I've read is kind of like between him and Austin Mack, it's sort of like George McIntyre, Faison Brandon. Russell's the younger player. He's also the more dynamic player. He's a little bit better of a runner than the veteran guy. When I say veteran, you know, McIntyre's been there one more year than Brandon, but it's similar in that quarterback battle between both. You just know with Tennessee you're going to have a young guy. You at least have the option for a more veteran guy at Alabama. I think it's going to be Russell as the starter. Alabama's very talented. I think that Alabama and Kalen DeBoer are in a similar situation to Josh Heupel in Tennessee, where it's kind of good, not great, from a fan base standpoint of what they see. Can you get those big wins? Josh Heupel's 2-0 against Alabama and Knoxville, which is crazy when you think about all those Tennessee coaches who couldn't beat Nick Saban. And now to see a coach that is undefeated against the rival in Knoxville. They get him in Knoxville again this year. I think it's a huge matchup, big swing game, honestly, Willie, for both those programs. I see both Tennessee and Alabama as possible back-end playoff teams. I think top to bottom from a roster talent standpoint, Tennessee is as good as they've ever been, probably better. There's just a question at quarterback. I saw Heather Dinich going nuts because Tennessee was ranked, and I'm thinking, first off, it's 2 5-star quarterbacks that are battling out for the job. I know they haven't picked one yet, but second, have you seen some of the talent on Tennessee's team? I think this is more future pros than they've ever had under Josh Heupel, and I think that Bama's recruited at a very good level too, so I'm with you, Willie. I think that's a big one for both those teams and a big one for both those coaches to continue to prove they can win monster games.
Chad Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace. Vin Gidendonic, he joins us every Friday at 4 o'clock. Chad, as always, a pleasure. We'll do it again next week.
By the way, the uniforms, the all colors with the orange and crimson, beautiful. When you look at those side by side, I put a list of the other ones I want to see. Duke and North Carolina, dark blue, baby blue would be perfect. And the guys, a sneaky one that jumped out, Miami green versus Florida State burgundy.
Ooh.
On the same field would be a work of art. I'll leave you to ponder with that over the weekend.
Good. Now, you got a problem if you have a black and white TV. It would be tough to tell those apart.
Yeah, if you're colorblind or have issues with that, you're going to have a real problem. Yeah.
It's going to be tough. Problem.
Yeah.
Remember the dress? No one could tell what color it was. Everybody had a different opinion on it.
Right, yeah.
Yes,
it's
going to
be like that.
Thank you, Chad.
Thanks, Jeff.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, Willie touched on it. A story in ESPN detailing the trials and tribulations of transfer portal quarterbacks. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, the game. Every now and then, Willie Donick surprises me.
Yeah, he throws out a little, you know, in too deep. The movie. Did you see the movie, Willie?
No, I did not see the movie.
That's a long time. That's where the song came from. It was on the soundtrack. Yeah, Deep Cover. It was on the soundtrack for the movie Deep Cover. So it was a pretty good movie.
Here is a question I need answered, though. The theme of the day is deep, to talk about the depth of the SEC. Did Sum 41 in too deep make an appearance on this list?
No.
Oh, then I don't like it anymore.
Wah, 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 wah.
Come on.
Hey, when it's your turn to have a musical theme.
You could put 42 deep
you
in.
You put 42 deep in there.
No, it's Sum 41 is the name of the band.
Sum 41?
In Too Deep is the name of the song. Oh, yes, Sum 41. Deep. You guys are so old. Come on.
Sum I already 41. Played you a song that's called In Too Deep.
Yeah.
Well, you can play another one.
No, yeah, I could, but I didn't.
Yeah.
Well,
because I had to get my guys. I had to get Deep Cover. I had to get the Snoop Dogg. And
he got to get the songs in that he likes, man.
Okay. All right. That's Parker. Parker or Sunshine, right? You're Sunshine.
I guess so. Hey, Sunshine. Just started calling me that, so it kind of stuck.
He does kind of look like Sunshine from Remember the Titans.
See, I'm not opposed to it.
It's
one of my favorite movies. I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah, the shorter hair Sunshine.
Shorter hair.
When he had to cut his hair off.
Yeah.
Yes, when he had to cut his hair.
Those locks ain't growing back.
So, Willie, you talked about the story with Chad Withrow. Max Olson of ESPN.com published a story yesterday with the headline, College Football's Mad Two-Week Scramble to Land a Transfer Portal Quarterback. And it features, among other quarterbacks, Bo Pribula, as you mentioned, who started 10 games in the SEC for Missouri last season. You also mentioned with Chad Withrow, Pribula suffered an injury in the Missouri game against Vanderbilt, which really seemed to turn the tide in the Commodores' favor in that game. But as Max Olson details in the story, Pribula spent 8 days on the road with 6 college visits and traveled more than 6,000 miles across the country and back. Here are the schools he visited in that stretch: Virginia Tech, Nebraska, Washington, Georgia Tech, Tennessee, and UVA. And it's a really interesting look. It's at the meat market, that is the transfer portal, specifically if you are a transfer portal quarterback.
You know, it reading the article, it was like when you're out in a garden and you see a rock and you lift up the rock and there's all of this stuff going on. Like there's insects and worms and stuff like crawling all under that rock. And you're like, everybody's like, why'd you lift that rock up? It looked so nice and peaceful how it was. And so I think a lot of college football fans aren't worried about how this process works. But if you are a parent of one of these quarterbacks, because this is the norm now, that's the thing about reading it that dawned on me, is that it is normal every summer that this happens. There is a musical chairs at quarterback. There's quite a bit of money at stake. There's a lot of teams out there looking for quarterbacks, and they have a finite amount of time to do it. So following Pribula and then reading about some of the other quarterbacks in this same boat and how this was working was fascinating to me. And Derek, I want to ask you to compare that and picture yourself as a college student, 20, 21 years old, with an agent that's you're trying to get information from. you're going through this process, and this is how crazy it is. A quarterback sometimes has a choice of, and this would be other positions too, I would think. I could take an offer without even going to the college to look at it, because there were instances where Privola, he's like, okay, they want me to come over and visit Nebraska or Virginia Tech. He ends up visiting five schools before he figures on the one he's going to do, and that's Virginia. A couple times he got there and mm-hmm. the team had already signed another quarterback. He literally didn't have time to get to the campus before the decision had to be made, and it was too late. So let's contrast that with when you were a free agent. We won't talk about how you became a free mm-hmm. agent, because it was not a happy day.
It's cutthroat.
But you had a couple of choices. You had the Ravens and you had the Patriots. Mm-hmm. Give me your timetable of how that process went.
It wasn't as rushed as as it is in college, because it seemed like college they have a two-week period, and they have to get everything, like visits, all this other stuff, and they typically want you to sign a contract. As soon as they get you in the building, they want you to sign a contract. And NFL teams does that as well, but I think there's a little bit more of a, because this is a long term. A lot of these, when you, at least for me, my free agency was a long-term thing, meaning they wasn't signing me to a year contract or a two-year contract. So it was, okay, we can, I've been cut. I can kind of sit back, talk with my agent, because everybody else, around the league is getting cut right around this time too. You sit back, you talk with your agent. You know there are teams out there that would love for you to play for them, but are they willing to pay the money that you believe you're worth? So there's not this rush. Because, in the NFL, you're signing long-term contracts. If everybody was signing a one-year contract, then I think there would be a rush to, oh, I need to get this guy because more than likely I'm only going to have him for a year. So I got to hurry up and go out there and get him because I'm constricted in my time because I only got a week or two. No, you got time to take all your visits, how many visits you want to take in the NFL, and sit down and really decide on, is this not only the team I want to be on, but it's the city? Because you're not in this bubble of college where, you only have to interact with so many people. When you're in the NFL, you got a life after that. It's not just all football. So there's a lot of things that goes into signing a contract. Do you like the city? Is the team on an upward mobility? How is the quarterback? How is the offensive coordinator? What are they paying you? So there are a lot of other things you got to sit back and think about. So you have days to do it. But it seemed like this, they're not giving you days.
No.
They're giving you hours.
Sometimes not even that. Now, you were 30 years old.
Yes, I was 30. And I took the full, it was like a month, close to a month where I had opportunity, because my kids were still in, Bailey was in preschool. DJ wasn't in school just yet. So we had time to kind of sit back and sort of decide. So all of it happened within a month time period, but I only took two visits.
But you had time.
Yes.
So you're talking about a month. Can you imagine going through that at age 20 instead of age 30?
No.
Like, how would you, how you had wisdom at age 30. You had mm-hmm. been a pro for a long time. I can't imagine what this is like for kids and their parents or their families, because there's an agent involved that you probably haven't been involved. How long had you been with your agent?
I had been with my agent at that point 5 years, I believe.
Okay, so.
Yeah, 5 years.
Bo Privola maybe hired this guy going into the portal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he had this relationship with this guy before, but you've got so much riding on the agent and the communications. It has got to be a mess. And hopefully it works out for a lot of these guys. I have to believe it doesn't work out when you don't have time to really think it through. Because so many things could go wrong when one guy called it, DJ Lagway, who was at Florida. He's now at Baylor, I think, is where he ended up. He was like, this is like speed dating. But a lot can go wrong when you do speed dating. We've all watched the TV shows, mm-hmm. The Bachelor or whatever. You just meet the person and they get married. It never works, right? They always get
divorced.
Love
is blind.
Love is
blind.
Same thing. Right. Why do we think it's going to work well here?
They don't care if it works, because again, a lot of this, you know, the genesis of a lot of this is, well, all of this is, they should have, you know, before they said, okay, we are going to, the rules are going to change. We are going, this is what's going to happen. We're, it's going to be, the NIL world will open up pretty soon here. But in the meantime, we need to put guardrails. We need to really put, build a structure where this thing works for everybody, more importantly for the student athlete. But they didn't do it because, again, it was the arrogance. Like, they had years ago to do, I mean, they had to, they had a chance to do this when I was in college because it was talked about then. We saw what Northwestern went through and they're, you know, trying to build a union. And the NCAA wagged their finger at them and said, no, we're not having that. All for it to it happen anyway, what, 7-8 years later? Probably a little bit less than that. So it's not going to get better. It's going to be even more stressful for these kids when they're maneuvering from college, from university to university, and they only have a small window.
Imagine being, Adam, the coach, whether it's the head coach or the offensive coordinator, the recruiting coordinator, you're trying to make this quick, fast decision. There's pressure. We got to have a great quarterback. We have to get one of these guys or else we're not going to be any good. And you have to make this decision. Who's the guy we want? Is it Pribula? Is it this guy? Is it that guy? And we've got to make this decision in a few hours. And there's all these variables happening in real time that are affecting this decision.
Part of this,
the stress has got to be off the charts.
Part of this story from Max Olson talks about Bo Pribula going to Nebraska, and he was in the facility at the same time as Anthony Calandria, another transfer portal quarterback, I believe, from UNLV. And Nebraska, the staffers at Nebraska tried their hardest to make sure that the two of them did not cross paths. But Calandria was like, I saw him. And while Pribula was talking to coaches, the Cornhuskers secured the commitment from Calandria. And they had to tell Pribula,
sorry. We got our guy.
Because there's no rules.
Well, one of the coaches, let me find the quote, off the Nebraska offensive coordinator, Dana Holgorsen, said, right, quote, it was awkward. But how else do you do it? You got to get him ASAP.
Yeah.
You have to make that decision because if you wait in the portal, you're cooked. If you wait an hour, you might be cooked.
That's what's happening.
Yeah. Yes.
So you, all of the things that you would like to do to be honorable, to be professional, to be ethical, you're forced to compromise all of that. Can you imagine being the staffers? Adam, we're on the second floor. Make sure Bo stays on the third floor. I've got the other guy on the second floor. We're going to offer him. Don't offer Bo anything yet until you get my signal. Like, there's got to be walkie-talkies and texts and everybody. I mean, and they still saw each other.
It just shows you, like, how crazy this level of you know, sport it's become, meaning the collegiate level. It's become something that I don't even think, you know, even those that were fighting for sort of name, image, and likeness 20 years ago, I don't think they ever thought it would be something like this, because now, again, it's just the wild, wild west. It's we're treating y'all as if y'all are objects, and we're just going to move y'all across the chessboard, and we're going to bring you in, and we're going to hope to bring you in behind him as he's leaving out so y'all won't see each other. It's just a cloak and dagger. It's like, this is what we've gotten to as a level of football, you know, not professional. Because even professional, this don't go on in the professional ranks.
Yes, this is supposed to be college years.
Exactly.
Where you're having fun. You're thinking about keg parties. And
what you going to do after the game?
With, you know, where am I going to hang out after practice? And check out the campus. Where am I going to be hanging out? They don't get to do any of that stuff.
Mm-mm. Nah. Your college life is gone.
You're sacrificing all of that.
615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction. Plus, Nick Saban, once again, chiming in on the depth. Funny quote from Nick Saban. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. A reminder that during the 5 o'clock hour, specifically around 5:15, 5:20, thereabouts, we will start Ask D-Mace, as we do normally on Fridays. But here's the catch. If you want a pair of tickets to see Ole Miss versus Louisville, at Nissan Stadium early next month in the Music City kickoff game. You need to participate and ask D-Mace. The person who asks the best question to Derek Mason, as chosen by Derek Mason, will win those tickets. So if you want them, you got to participate. 615-737-1025. That's coming up at around 515, 520. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. This song is dedicated to one, Charles McCube.
My man Ricky back there, too.
He is?
Yeah, Ricky's back
Rick
there.
Garrett back in the house.
Yeah, Rick, man, shout us to God. Shout us to Fingers.
The one and only.
Ricky, where you at, man?
He came in Come like back a hurricane. Through. Yeah. He came in like a hurricane that busted right out.
Boy, he had the biggest smile on his face because he and his homeboy are about to hit the road.
They're going to Vegas. The two
and his homeboy are about to hit the road. He had the biggest smile on his face.
Mothers, they can't contain themselves.
Mothers, lock up your daughters. Chase McCabe and Ricky Merritt on the loose, on the
Chase
strip.
Chase got a girlfriend. Chase got a girlfriend. Yeah, he said he's, you know, he's going to have fun, but that's it.
You know, Chase has that animal magnetism, you know? He can't help it.
He's like, no, I got a girl.
He may have a girlfriend, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't attract other ladies.
Okay, yeah.
But he is a faithful boyfriend, that I know. Mm-hmm. That I know.
Yeah.
So I hope the two of you lovebirds, Ricky and Chase, have a wonderful time in Las Vegas this weekend. So along the lines of the depth, Nick Saban was on, I think, the Pat McAfee show today, and he was talking about Miami coach Mario Cristobal and the conversations they've had about the depth. Here's what Saban said. Quote, he calls me up with this ACC BS, except he didn't say BS. He's always trying to convince me the ACC is better than the SEC. The SEC has 9 teams in the top 25. That's all I know. It's a deep conference. It just is. The Big Ten is a really good conference and getting better when it comes to depth, but really good at the top with Ohio State and Oregon. He's never going to convince me, never, that the ACC is better than the SEC.
And it came into play last year. We talked a lot about Vanderbilt, Miami, and Notre Dame. Vanderbilt, and all three were 10-2. Am I right? All three of those? And
yes.
Then you even throw in Texas was another team. And there was like only one spot for those four teams. So it was a bad year to be 10-2. But the pathway for Texas and Vanderbilt, I think this is what Nick Saban. So I'm just following in Coach Saban's shoes, right? Your coach, Derek. Your coach.
He's on
my side. He's coached in both leagues. But I think Miami.
I see them flip-flop more than a fish.
Miami, in their situation, I think it 10-2 in the ACC, 10-2 for a Notre Dame schedule, and 10-2 in the SEC are not the same. They're not the same.
I should note that Miami is 5-0 against SEC opponents in its past 5 tries. Just saying.
Yeah, just throw that out there.
Just saying.
Look, it's not a reflection of how good the team is. That's a tough nuance of my argument. Miami was loaded last year. Look, I won the title with our ticket to the bank, and I won a lot of points by riding Miami as a heavy favorite.
You did.
In a lot of their games. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of points because they were legit, and they proved that in the playoffs. They won at Texas A&M. They beat Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
SEC.
Did they beat another SEC team along the way? I can't remember. Or no, it was Ohio State, right? So that's a legit team. So Miami was legit talent-wise, but the invitation to the playoffs is everything. So how you do in the playoffs is a separate discussion of how you should earn a playoff berth.
Miami beat Texas A&M, Ohio State, and Ole Miss before losing to Indiana.
It's a pretty impressive run that they had. There's no getting around that.
Winning it, that's the only thing that matters.
But they had, you know, if look at their week in, week out schedule, they had probably 6 games or 7 games that were.
Well, they should be battle tested. That's what I say. You battle tested then.
But you're more easily prepared to be geared up for the big games when you have a schedule like that, as opposed to the week in, week out challenges of the SEC.
No, you're not, because the SEC is supposed – it's Come iron on. Sharpens iron. So once you get against everybody else, because the SEC claim it's the, you know, NFL 2.0, then when y'all play everybody else, y'all should just mollywop them. But y'all don't.
So I mean, the ACC did have the 33rd team last year. Well, how did that go for North Carolina? Not good, but I digress.
Yeah, so that's, again,
and Miami
I know
win
it's
their
a,
league. Like, Miami didn't even win the ACC last year.
Who did? Duke.
Okay, you had a team.
ACC champions.
They didn't win an ACC, but they beat two SEC teams in the playoffs.
Right. What they did in the playoffs is not
the
question.
That's what really matters.
How you get the bid.
But that's what really matters. Right? It took you a while to answer that. Yeah, that's what really matters.
Miami was a legitimate good team, but you should reward teams that play a tougher schedule. That is,
if you can't win in your tough schedules, why should I? Okay, I should reward you just because you play a tough schedule and you 7-5. Why should I reward you for that? Or 8-4? Why should I reward you that? 9-3? Why should I reward you for that?
I think for all of time in football, when people vote for the top 25, and I think this is still embedded in the way the committee looks, is that you still have a shiny metal object in that when you look at the team's record. It's always been record. Where college basketball, the committee, they look at strength of schedule. A 19-13 as opposed to a 22-9, that doesn't matter. You don't look at that. You look at how the quality wins, and you look at the strength of schedule, and that's the determining factor. I would like to see more of that in the college football committee.
I guarantee you, once they open this thing up to 24, you will not hear this argument ever again by the SEC. Ever. They won't be talking about depth of the conference. They won't. They're only talking about depth of the conference now because, one, they haven't won a national championship in the last 5 years. And then, two.
It's only been three.
Well, 3 years. But still.
I like how you're exaggerating for your point.
Can I chime in right here?
Yeah.
Please.
So, to Willie's point about Miami, and I applaud you for the nuance in the argument. Let's say I take the Super Bowl favorites this year, the LA Rams, and I drop them in the Sun Belt. They are going to obliterate everybody on their schedule. They're going to go undefeated. And just because they played a weak strength of schedule, that doesn't change the fact that they're the LA Rams. But also at the same time, let's take a James Madison who went 11-1 last year, and the team they lost to was Louisville. They lost by 2 touchdowns, and their strength of schedule was in the hundreds. Texas's 9-3 is more impressive than James Madison's 11-1. So one of the biggest lies in college football is you are what your record says you are, which is not the case.
Well, you're talking about.
I agree with that.
Yeah, but you're talking about two extremes. You're talking about a Texas team and a John Madison team. They are no way on no earth on the same plane, you know, from facilities to players to, you know, NIL money. They're not. So when you're comparing those two, their role to a championship is a little bit tougher than James Madison, because James Madison is in another conference that's, it's not like comparing the Big Ten to the SEC, you know. Comparing the Big Ten and the SEC, I think there's more of a comparable to it, because you figure at least the top half of each conference, they do invest, you know, some teams a little bit more, Texas, teams like that, but they do invest the money that they need to invest in to have a team that's capable of winning a national championship, whereas – and, you know, I forget what conference is James Madison in.
Sun Belt.
So the Sun Belt, no one in the Sun Belt, including James Madison, they don't have the funds and everything to put toward their program. So maybe James Madison has a little bit more than everybody else, but you don't see that a lot of times in the SEC. The SEC, everybody, you know, at least the top half, has the same amount of money to operate in. James Madison may be the top guy or the top team as far as revenue and what they can give their players in the Sun Belt.
But what's more important? I mean, James Madison's best win was Washington State by 5 points. Texas beat Texas A&M last year, but yet they went 9-3. And that's the whole reason the SEC moved to 9 conference games, because they thought that the committee was going to value strength of schedule more. But they're still, they're not. We all know they're not.
Well, they may, and because it changes just about every year. 1 year strength of schedule, something to something else.
So that, and that is humans
exactly
deciding. So that, I think, is at the crux. Now that they're going 9, will people look at 9-3 differently than they have in
because
the past?
Because you are right.
Just I don't look think at they the are.
They went
I don't
to,
think they are.
They went to 9 because of that. Because they thought, oh, strength of schedule. Let's do the 9th game within the conference. And people, they will count that for us. Now it seems like at least last year they counted it against them.
Because if Indiana, with their strength of schedule, goes 10-2 this year, and you have Oklahoma who goes 9-3, but they play a much tougher strength of schedule, we all know the bid's going to Indiana over Oklahoma because of the record.
That's how it's always been.
615-737.
Keep talking about the depth.
615-737-1025. We'll get to that. On the other side, we'll revisit our recap of the Titans joint practice today with the Seattle Seahawks. Plus, we'll look ahead to the preseason game on Sunday. And I have a question about Cam Ward and the preseason game, which I'm going to feel silly even asking the question, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.